This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, go for it.
Fake the Nation, episode 244.
Like, that was great. But do you think you could do it like a little less like sexual?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, girl, I got you.
Fake the Nation, episode 244.
That's perfect.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we ring in the Persian New Year at our new home at HeadGum. Pew, 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 pew. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and we are taping this on the Persian New Year precursor holiday, popularly known as St. Patrick's Day. Pew, 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 pew. And I encourage one and all to randomly celebrate all of these things because there's some pandemic year mark doldrums happening, and I say no to doldrums. No doldrums. So celebrate all of them. Celebrate all of the things. Today, we're going to talk about border problems, or are they border problatunities? And we'll also do a Cuomo check-in. We'll do a vaccine hesitancy check-in. And pasta. There's been innovation in the world of pasta, and we have the innovator with us, and we have lots of thoughts about it. Today, oh my God, I'm so excited by this panel. I'll just start with the pasta innovator himself. He is host of the podcast Sporkful, which is such a wonderful podcast. I've had the pleasure of being on that podcast and the pleasure of listening to that podcast, so you should immediately be downloading and subscribing. It is the one and only Dan Pashman. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nagin. Thanks so much for having me again.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so happy you're here. And we're also joined by, oh, my gosh, one of my old comedy buddies. You know, we go way back to when we could make jokes about Obama. He is the executive producer and host of the podcast How to Citizen. He is the wonderful Baratunde Thurston. Hey, Baratunde.
Hello, Nagin. Hello, Dan. Good to be here with you both.
Again, you should be subscribing to How to Citizen immediately. All right.
Like right now.
Yeah.
Like pause this podcast. Okay, welcome.
You know what?
Back,
this entire podcast is 45 minutes of silence just so that you can go do the subscribing, come back, and we'll still be silent.
Yeah.
It's a silent networking podcast.
We're going to communicate with our eyes over Zoom. Here we go with topic number one. So there's a surge in migration at the border. And can I just say, I understand that this could pose some logistical problems, but forgetting all of that for 1 minute, I was relieved to hear that we still have a country that people want to migrate to. You know what I mean? We're like still throwing a party that people will show up to.
Right. And the brand may not be dead after all.
Exactly. USA. USA. USA.
So, okay, but beyond the no doldrums positive spin on we still have a country people care to visit and even live in, what is going on? And here's the thing that all of the people are saying on all of the news outlets is that it's Biden's fault. To what extent is there a problem, and to what extent is it our new president's fault? Baratunde, thoughts?
Yeah, so this is the downside of having a competent president. It's like people are like, I like the way he moves. I like that. Let's get on over and dance with Biden. Honestly, it's a confusing situation. I think if anybody is kind of like, what's going on, you and the Homeland Security Department and Border Patrol and immigration rights activists as well. It seems like people who want to migrate to the U.S. do so without any regard for the politics happening in the U.S. at the time. It's a very selfish, desperate, I guess, plea for life. mm-hmm. that people are making. And so what I've recently learned is that this is the largest wave we had in 20 years. There has seemed to have been a cycle to this, regardless of who was president. The Obama administration faced a huge influx. That was the first time any of us heard about unaccompanied minors, aka children, at the border showing up. Then under Donald Trump, despite his protestations and, you know, trying to scare everyone who might be brown out of the country who was already here, people still showed up. So I think it's too simple to say, oh, Biden's lax immigration policies have lured all these people here. And if you look at how far people are coming from, they started this migration well before the election. So they didn't even know who was going to be president. They were taking a big gamble that they might be met with a lot of ugliness. So I think climate change seems to be a huge driver of what's happening. There's civil unrest and there's terrible, terrible economic conditions. We like to think our economy is not doing great, but a lot of places down in Latin America are doing a lot worse. So I'm predicting this is only going to get worse until we solve some of what's happening in the places people are fleeing from. And to the folks who are making that journey, I just extend a lot of compassion and sympathy because I don't think people are doing this to like own the libs. I don't think the Hondurans are setting out on some kind of epic trolling journey. I think they must really have something to run away from to come that journey that way.
Dan, how does it strike you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree certainly with what Baratunde said that this is a complicated issue, and anybody who wants to just dumb it down to like, oh, we changed presidents, that's the explanation, period, is oversimplifying things. It's hard for me to believe that Biden becoming president and changing some of our immigration laws has no impact, because the people coming to the border, I think, I understand that they're also sometimes susceptible to a lot of the rumors that get spread about their chances of getting in by people who are looking to take advantage of them. But I think they're also a lot of them are savvy enough to understand that the rules are going to change. That doesn't mean that Trump's policies were right and Biden's are wrong. So I wouldn't say that it's Biden's fault. I would not use that word. I would just say that, like, I think that a lot of them are smart enough to recognize that they may have a better chance of entering the country now. Either way, like, the policies, it's also just evidence that Trump's policies didn't solve the problem, the underlying problems that Baratunde refers to, which are the things that motivate people to take such a tremendous risk on such an unknown process of trying to make it to the border in the first place. You know, and I don't pretend to have a perfect solution to that problem. I think anyone who tells you that can tell you in three sentences what the answer to that issue is oversimplifying things. You know, I also have a lot of compassion for all of the people who are taking tremendous risks to their personal safety and often having to hand over their life savings in order to try to make this journey. So I'm glad that our policy has become more compassionate and more human. But I also think that we need to have some kind of system. And I don't pretend to know what that system is, but I think that Biden is going to continue to be plagued by this on a political front because it's hard to find a humane system that works.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I was reading somewhere that it costs about $8,000 to get this, to pay the smugglers to get you over and all of that stuff. Whatever the travel costs are between the countries, because they're not just coming from, you know, the town outside of the border, right? They're coming from long distances, as Baratunde was saying. And so to spend that $8,000, which is a lot of money for the average American, never mind the average, you know, migrant, there's a lot at stake. Do you have the money? Is it going to be basically a sure thing, or like, what is the likelihood you're going to be able to actually make it across? All that stuff. So there is an element of like, hey, climate is good for us. Try now, you know, and that is a word of mouth thing, I think, that does happen. So in the sense that like the word of mouth was, the United States is no longer headed by, you know, an inhumane monster, like in that word got across, you know what I mean? Isn't, again, it's like, Yeah, in that sense, it's Biden's fault, quote unquote. But like, it's also just like, no, no, we chose humanity. You know what I mean? We chose humanity and now the world knows. Like, we can't keep it a secret. We don't have like a guy who would sooner, you know, separate children from their mothers. So in that sense, it's Biden's fault, I guess, just being a decent dude. But also, yeah, I mean, people are going to, you know, are going to go when conditions are more favorable to them. And they're also going to go, as Baratunde was saying, when they're the most desperate. Like, and that's something that is not being controlled by them. It's geopolitical forces. That's the gangs running wild that haven't been controlled.
So can I add something?
Sure,
yeah,
here, please.
Nikki? First, I think one solution might be make Central America great again, and then people will really want to invest and stay there. There's something, I think I have two thoughts. One is truly like, in all the conversations, whether it's Trump as president, Obama as president, or Biden as president, I have heard relatively little about what's happening in Honduras or in these other nations.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
We only know about it when they're just outside the door. And I think there's a economic policy, a global economic policy, a foreign policy, a drug policy that we are participatory in, maybe even driving as a nation, which has created these conditions, or at least contributed to them.
Right.
So there's probably some solution that involves like multilateralism and being global participants. That's just not ever been a part of our political debates. It's not part of our news coverage. And so we're missing that half of the story. The other thing is from a liberal American perspective, I think a lot of us got lured into the idea that, okay, everything Donald Trump bad, and there's literally nothing sensible coming out of that administration. And when he's not there, good things just going to happen. And I think the inconvenient truth here is like, no, the world's a messy place and presidents don't get to pick their crises. And the binary interpretation, because Stephen Miller was a dick, everything that happened under the Trump administration was the fault of the dicks he appointed. That's not true either.
Right.
And so the nuance got lost because we had such a monster. And now I think there are people who are like, we'll never put a kid in a cage again. And then you see the photos and they look kind of similar to what they did under Trump.
Right.
And so some of us who were very against that just got to be like, oh, okay. So the cruelty was the point there, but the underlying circumstance now was still not great. So how do we kind of own that and try to be more, just have more integrity to our interpretation of events?
Yeah, I mean, because
now that the monster's not in the White House anymore.
Right, because part of it with Donnie was that any policy that existed that was functional, he got rid of it because Obama created it, right? So yeah. We don't want to come in and do the same thing because that's dumb. Like, if there was something that's like saying Pfizer was created while Donald Trump was Pfizer created a vaccine while Donald Trump was president. I'm not fucking getting that vaccine. You know what I mean? It's dumb. So we shouldn't do that. And I don't want to I don't want to say that Biden did nothing. It's just that he's a humane guy and the news got out because he did specifically do some things. For example, he, where's my list of things that, guys, where in my document did you put my list of things? All right, here we go. He eased immigration controls. He paused deportations. He put an end to the wait in Mexico policy, which was really big with the Trump administration, which I don't even understand how the fuck that worked with Mexico. But anyway, that's a question.
Yeah, no, it's like basically, you know how in Zoom where you can set up like a waiting room before anybody gets... Mexico was our Zoom waiting room. That's, yeah.
It seems to be like the point you're making, Nagin, is that, I mean, and this is kind of like the fucked up truth that I think we have to look at is like, it may be that to some degree, Trump's horrendous, cruel, inhumane immigration policy did accomplish to some degree responsible for reducing people coming to the border. That doesn't mean it was the right thing to do. Mm. That doesn't mean I want us to keep doing
it.
You know, the end doesn't always justify the means.
But it did in a sense, like, work.
Right,
and
right.
Some people are saying Biden didn't have to do these things because he basically created the conditions for the spike to occur. And is he, the question is he sort of creating his own future inelectability or the Democrats' future own inelectability by, with this problem? Right, just to end it on a gross political question.
But like, that's the thing about immigration as a political issue, which is that I think it's very, very hard to come up with a humane, middle ground, reasonable policy that treats people with dignity, that allows immigrants to come into this country in a way that is managed in some capacity, like short of open borders, but that doesn't create a crisis at the border. And I don't know what exactly. I mean, I agree with everything you said, Baratunde, about like about the underlying causes and things happening in Central America. And yes, we should, you know, look at ourselves in the mirror. In what ways are we contributing to the underlying causes? But I don't know that it's ever going to stop people from wanting to come into America. And so the Republicans' policy is basically just like, stop all immigration. We hate immigrants. That's a much simpler sell politically than the Democrats, which is this sort of muddled middle ground with no clear answer other than like, we need immigration reform, but nobody will tell you what that means.
Right, right,
to be fair, the Republican position is stop all brown immigrants.
Okay, yes.
Correct.
No, that
agreed,
is
yes.
I believe they're the shithole country immigrants,
right,
is what they might technically be referred to as. And
right,
I
but
just
if you're from Scandinavia, Trump loves the Scandinavians. The farther
in,
north in Scandinavia, the closer to the North
you.
Pole, the
yeah.
better.
So let's, and I want to close here on pointing out there's like a CBS YouGov poll that found that 62% of respondents approve of the way Biden's handling his job as president. That's really high. 60% percent approve of his handling of the economy. 67% approve of his handling of the coronavirus. Now the percentage is, lower on immigration, and then
I think it was 52% in the article you sent.
Oh, there it is. Okay, thanks, because I didn't write it down. I wrote down all the other ones for some reason again because someone's fucking with my notes. I don't know who it is, but I'm looking at all of you. Yeah. So 52%. So the numbers aren't dire. There's obviously a lot of time. Whatever. If we're looking at midterm elections, but this is a thing, and I love that it is like, I guess I don't want to say crisis level, but there is a crisis. You know, if you look at some of the images, like Baratunde was saying of unpleasant things, there is some crisis level shit going on. However, there's time to fix it in a gross political way, and time for the midterms. You know what I mean? Some of it is logistical management. That's some of it, you know, is just straight up logistical management, like building, using parking lot structures effectively or whatever it is, you know, because they, I think, started building out into one of their parking lots. So some of it is that.
The other thing about, I'm really interested in research which shows that people are more likely to share when they feel like they have enough. This is a general sociological phenomenon.
Mm.
And
right,
so
if Americans feel prosperous, then they'll be like, come on
right,
in.
And right, exactly. Immigration will be less of a good issue for the GOP, and we will be more open-minded to people coming in if we address these big issues that in America, like income inequality.
Yeah, that's nice. I like that. I like that thought. I mean, you know, it'd be great if we could just share regardless, but anyway.
That's a nice, that's a great joke. Dan is a good comedian.
You know what? Let me know what you people think about this whole situation. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And I am going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about other things. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good
all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. We are back, and I just want to remind everyone that we are on Patreon. We'll be releasing bonus episodes very soon, as early as April, so get in on it. We're going to have a bonus episode every other week, and there are a lot of levels of support, so please support your local Iranian-American Muslim podcast host on Patreon. And now let's get into topic number 2A. We're going to do a quick Cuomo check-in, because last week we talked about the Cuomo situation, and then since then, more people have
have asked for his resignation. And I wanted to do a quick check-in and see how we're feeling. People like Chuck Schumer, AOC, Kirsten Gillibrand have all asked him to resign. But people like Biden and Pelosi have asked the investigation to play out. Dan, where are you on this?
I go back and forth. I mean, I was never an Andrew Cuomo fan, so I'm not going to, you know, lose any sleep if he's forced out. I went through that very brief period last March where I was like, oh, I guess like now's a good time to have a guy like this.
Right.
And I felt that way for a few weeks. Then he announced a book deal. You know, he within 15 minutes of him being a national sensation, he was writing books on leadership. So I was like, oh, now I remember why I hate this guy. And so I'm not gonna lose any shed any tears for him. On the other hand, I feel very conflicted about the extreme double standard around issues of sexual harassment that exist between Democratic politicians and Republican politicians. And I don't expect that anyone who might replace him long term would be any better morally or politically. And so I just don't know really what I should be rooting for.
Okay, that's an honest admission to, like, I don't know. I think a lot of how I feel. Baratunde, how do you feel?
There's a phrase I heard as a kid. I was a little woke bastard, and I remember hearing
before we used
some Malcolm X speeches on vinyl, because that's how my mom rolled. And he said, America's chickens are coming home to roost. And I think Cuomo's chickens are coming home to roost. This guy has been the most self-serving, mendacious, backstabbing, conniving, power-hungry, abusive, manipulative piece of shit. And it's finally coming out. And I have heard stories about this dude. I'm until recently a resident of New York City and New York State. The last election I voted in New York was in 2018, where I gleefully supported a slate of state legislative candidates for the Democratic Party who wrested control, not from the Republican Party, but from Governor Andrew Cuomo, who, despite the Democrats having a majority in the Senate, he helped create this independent Democratic caucus, aka turncoat Democrats, who effectively gave control of the chamber to the Republican Party with the blessing and to the benefit of Andrew Cuomo. This is someone who threatens people. This is someone who tried to destroy the Working Families Party, which is a really powerful progressive force that has led to a lot of good policies in New York State and across the country. To summarize what Dan just said, I will not miss this person if he's gone. I will not at all. I think you reap what you sow, and he has sown abuse. Whether he did all the things that he's accused of or not, he has no friends. Because he stabbed everybody in the back for himself. And that, to me, is the more revealing thing. You got nobody out there defending you.
Yeah.
Nobody's going on cable news. Nobody's quoting by name, he's the greatest governor of all time. His leadership book taught me so much. Because he sacrificed all that goodwill for self-gain. And in that sense, he was very much like the last president we had. I'm disappointed and I'm disgusted in his behavior.
It's funny, Baratunde, because I believe last week I did a description of Cuomo that included words like, he's not a very nice guy. That's like how intense I got, okay? Yeah.
Can I just ask one question? Like, this is my, I'm putting on my cynical former news reporter's hat and basically asking, like, I agree with everything you just said, Baratunde, but is he truly so different from most other politicians, or is he just not as good at hiding it?
That's an interesting question.
And we'll really never know. I mean, I think the IDC, the Independent Democratic Caucus example that Baratunde cited, is probably one of the bigger, for me, dick things that a person could do as a Democratic governor of a state. So I'm adding a not a very nice guy to, like, dick move on that. I have to say, part of it is, look, it also, the question is, he was voted in. He is a Democrat. Mm-hmm. He's a governor that was voted in. I am really curious to see one of these investigations actually play out, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a little tired of, like, you know, pushing people to resign before we hear about an investigation. Like, what are these investigations? What do they then recommend? Let's see one happen. And I think in a situation like this, and I think in the Franken situation, I said let the investigation play out. Let's let due process play out. I remember reading a piece by Zephyr Teachout that was just like, there should be due process. So we know what happened. And what is the recommendation? And I feel like until we get a kind of formal process, we're not going to have a formal process. You know what I mean? I would love to have a formal process, is what I'm saying.
Nagin for governor. This is great. But in the next election. No, Nagin, this is because I don't, even with my big rant, I didn't necessarily say how I felt about him resigning. And it's probably because I wasn't sure. But Nagin, you have helped make me feel more sure. Hmm. That we should let this play out. I live in California now. We also have a once very popular Democratic governor, overwhelmingly elected somewhat recently. And now there's this recall effort. And it's kind of exhausting. So I think what would be a beautiful outcome of this, we learn just how not a nice person Andrew Cuomo has been on the record. And then the voters get to decide in the next election and send a very clear, overwhelming message one way or the other. A la Marion Barry, my former D.C. mayor. Why am I always governed by these things? But is it me? Am I causing this?
No, maybe it's just politicians. That's what I'm saying. You know?
That makes me feel better, but also sadder. Like, I'm like, is it worse that it's my politicians, or is it worse that it's just everybody? Yeah. Anyway, the voters can decide we don't care anymore. Or they're like, that's disgusting. You got to go. And he'd have to live with that, which in some ways is better than resigning in shame.
Right? It's like being fired in shame or whatever.
Yes.
I don't know. Okay, let's move on. So, folks, let me know. Things have changed since we last talked about it. Have your feelings changed? I don't know. I'm on all the social medias that we're not supposed to be looking at and ready to read your tweets. Let us move on to topic number 2B. Okay, so let's talk about vaccine hesitancy. Are you or anyone you know hesitant about the vaccine, Dan?
I am personally not hesitant. In fact, I got my first dose recently.
Hey.
I'm happy to say I have asthma, so I became eligible when they added that to the New York State list. And my wife got it as well because she's a teacher. And so, yeah, I'm not hesitant. People in my family are not hesitant. There's one guy, a neighbor of mine who I spoke to recently, who's like, you know, guy, he's younger, he's in good shape. And he sort of says, I think he's, you know, I can't tell exactly where his politics lie, but not exactly with mine, to the right of mine for sure. And he was sort of like, they developed it so quickly, you know, I'm going to wait to let other people get it and make sure it's like, okay. And I was just like, whatever, you know, so I haven't seen a lot of it firsthand, but I know that it's out there for sure.
Bear Tunde, where are you at with this?
I'm pro vaccines. I'll even take that AstraZeneca joint, you know, blood clots ain't got nothing on me. My blood is loose. I don't know what that means. Maybe we can.
Your blood is super slutty. Is that what that means?
I know. My blood's all over the place, baby. can't lock my blood down. My blood wants to be free. But no. So I'm not hesitant. I have listened to too many epidemiologists to understand that. Anyone who gets a vaccine is doing some work on behalf of all of us to slow the chance that this virus can further mutate and create variants that would be less responsive to future vaccines. So it's like every shot in every arm is slowing this thing down from slowing us all down forever. So I get that. I like that. The hesitancy I have encountered, one is people who are like, I don't like Johnson & Johnson. It seems less effective. So like I want the good vaccine. So it's like a brand loyalty thing.
And
like sort of vaccine shopping. Or it's like, I don't like that company because of what Johnson & Johnson did with like baby powder and opioids. And so just morally, it's like, I want to go with like the ethical, the most ethical big pharma company out there. And you got to break the news to them. That doesn't exist. and sort of pandemic victims can't be choosers, to adapt a phrase. And then I think there, it gets a little deeper in the hesitancy I've encountered, which is what's in it. You know, there's people who have pseudoscientific understandings of vaccines. So they're like, is there DNA in there? Are you giving me COVID? Are there babies in the vaccine or like stem cells? So there's all, there's a religious stuff, there's pseudoscience that gets, and so I find myself sharing articles with people and trying to get more educated just in case I stumble into that conversation. And then the last category of hesitancy is the last time like a majority white colonial power promised to bring, you know, aid and comfort to people of color, it didn't end so well for the people of color. So, you know, understand if we're a little hesitant to accept this gift from the British government or from the US government. And that's some deep, like historic trauma that I try to be very patient with, as opposed to just like, say, you're dumb, trust the government. It's like, ah, is it smart to always just trust the government? So I understand where that's coming from, even as I think I have a deep enough understanding now to be like, but for this, We should go with these vaccines and then sort out the underlying issues that make you hesitant about trusting these authorities.
Well, it's interesting, because I don't actually have the specific numbers on people of color, but the numbers that are coming up now for epidemiologists are of Trump supporters. It's Trump supporters are the least likely to seek the vaccine. 49% of Republican men, 47% of Trump supporters, and 41% of Republicans overall said they wouldn't get the vaccine if it was made available to them. And then another poll, so I think that was like a Marist poll, and then a CNN poll showed that 57% of Republicans were planning on saying no when they were made eligible or were already as eligible people.
First of all, 57% of Republicans is not that many people. We don't really need all them. All right.
Like, I mean,
like, you know, like the Republicans are like 40%.
We don't need all of them for what specifically?
Well,
herd immunity, or just a good party.
We don't need them all to reach herd immunity. We don't need them all to get vaccinated to reach herd immunity. You know, 57% of Republicans. So that's a little more than half. Republicans are like 40 or 42% of the country. So you're talking about like 23 or 24% of the country. Are these Republicans you're talking about? Plus, a lot of them are full of shit. And when all their friends have it, they'll get
They're going to get it. Yeah, yeah. Some of this
That's an argument I buy.
Some of this feels very
we don't need
blustery.
Them part, I'm like, I don't know. The amateur epidemiologist in me is like, I think we need everybody we can get. But, you know, I'm not a real scientist. I just play one on podcasts. but that's a disturbing, the partisan nature of it. That's so, it just makes me feel like we're doomed as a nation because you're like, really? That's and you know who could fix that.
Right.
You know, he who shall not be named
right.
could like make it a requirement of attending one of those MAGA rallies to show your vaccine card. And then everybody would want to do it to prove you. What if you called it MAGA juice and you're like, yo, did you get your shot of MAGA juice? Oh, you don't love America if you didn't get the MAGA juice shot.
I mean, Pence got his with cameras going. But yeah, Trump and Melania.
But they also tried to assassinate him. So clearly he's not the spokesperson that they all will follow.
Right. I do have to say that I got my first shot at the Javits Center, which is the big convention center in Manhattan. It was designed in the 70s to look the way people in the 70s thought the future would look. So it kind of feels like being an Epcot Center. And then there's all these National Guard troops there, and you're in these lines being sort of herded forward, and then, you know, with all these soldiers around. Granted, everyone who worked there was lovely, and it was very well organized and very well run, but you still kind of felt like you were being herded, like to all just take turns being injected with this stuff. And I left there saying to my wife, like, if I believed in the crazy conspiracies, everything I just saw there would have validated what I thought, you know, like did I just get injected with a microchip? Yeah, probably. But like, since my reprogramming, I feel great. I got to say, like, did you know that Donald Trump invented electricity? I had no idea. But like, kudos to that guy. So it was weird. But
I had the same experience with my first dose that was, this is so well organized. Like, this feels it, you know, everybody was extremely delightful. Like the whole thing, there was a lot of people, there was a lot of like official presence, of staff workers and some military presence and all that stuff. But it didn't, I don't know. I was just like, wow, we're doing this on such a large scale. How impressive. This is the shit that makes America America, is this exactly this shit. It's the fucking Javits Center with thousands of people getting jabbed in the arm and then following that up with like a car show or something. You know, it's like, that is what makes America America. And it's, it is remarkable.
It also made me feel like a little bit good about human beings for a minute, which is something, which is an emotion I hadn't felt in quite a while. You know, like, oh, you know, like it's been far from perfect, and there's too much inequality in the way that it's been done, and I could point to many problems with this whole the process of creating and distributing the vaccine, but like it did require hundreds or thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands of people to work together to make this vaccine and distribute it. And you see all these people who didn't know each other by that morning all working together to help other people. And you're like, oh, maybe we're not all bad.
Right. And I think that...
America. I'm not even talking about America. I'm just talking about humans. Forget America. I'm saying human beings.
But do humans have an anthem? Yeah. You should say that right there.
I think that if we want to... concern ourselves with the, you know, percentage of Republicans that Dan says we don't need to return to the epidemiologist Dan Pashman, host of the Sporkful podcast, says that we don't need. I think there's a few people that they will listen to. Trump, obviously. So if anybody has any pull with that guy, give him a call. But also pastors, priests, like people that kind of have that authority over the community. If they're getting
what about the Duck Dynasty guys?
The Duck Dynasty guys. Let's talk about them for never, because I don't even think they're on TV anymore. I don't know. I could be wrong. But also neighbors. I've talked about this a lot, but one of my neighbors who was a vaccine skeptic said, oh, if you get it, I'll get it. And I was like, I'm definitely getting it. And he's like, okay, I'll get it. So you like have power over your neighbors. Folks, if you're out there and you go to a church or whatever, and you know some of these people that have some kind of authority, also your local doctors, your local nurses, all of those people that people, those kind of medical professionals that that are local to people that they trust, that they see at the supermarket, that they're neighbors with, those people have a lot of sway. So those are the people that have to kind of go on a mini marketing campaign to get the, you know, the people, the skeptics on board so we can get rid of this thing so I can start fucking going back to karaoke. Okay. And that's what this is all about. All right. Let us move on to topic number three. You guys, this is such an exciting topic. It's like, I feel like it's a very, very special Fake the Nation segment because this has never happened before. But Dan invented a new pasta shape. I mean, by the way, trigger warning, this segment will be difficult for people on a low-carb diet. And I'm looking at me, everybody. Dan, a few years ago, you were frustrated with pasta shapes. Tell me about that frustration.
Yeah, so, look, I love pasta, and at the end of the day, if I'm hungry, I'll eat any plate of pasta you put in front of me. That being said, I did just start to feel like, you know, a lot of the pasta shapes out there aren't that great. You know, like, they do one or two things well. Like, you know, so the things I look for in a pasta shape are, like, what I call forkability. How well does it stay on the fork? Sauceability.
Get the fork out of here, Dan.
Yeah. Sauceability. How well does it hold sauce? And tooth sinkability, which is like how satisfying is it to bite into it? And a lot of shapes are good at one or two of those things, but not many are good at all three. You know, like spaghetti.
Is there a scale? Is there a grading scale along these factors?
I have not assigned specific numbers to it, but I would love to collaborate with you on that, Barrington Day.
Yeah, none of this makes sense unless there's a big data graph, color-coded chart yeah. that we can see. You know, and so I agree, because one thing when I was reading about forkability and sauceability, for example, I feel like spaghetti that's meant to hold sauce is the kind is just like sits on a plate and then a bunch of just gross water ends up on the bottom, and it just the whole thing, or it could also be my inability as a cook. Mm-hmm. But
It's a fourth factor.
Right, right, right. But let's pretend that I'm amazing. I always felt like the spaghetti was somehow lacking. It was also like messier than it needed to be. You know, it's like you're eating it, but it gets all around your fucking mustache. And I say that as a Middle Eastern woman with a mustache. Thank you. And so I always felt like that shape was... I didn't know why it had taken the imagination of an entire globe. You know what I mean? Like, why is that so popular? Bertude, have you ever... What is your relationship with pasta and its shapes?
Yeah, yeah. I first met pasta. Must have been the early 80s. You know, the 80s were wild. Like, that was crazy.
A crazy time.
I was like 4 years old. It ended up everywhere but my mouth. You know what I mean? Like, it was like a Wall Street party. And... I think I just wanted more cheese at the time.
Yeah,
I could just never get enough of the cheese, cheese and macaroni, a long fave. My relationship with pasta is I can never remember what type of pasta is what. Mm. I have this kind of, I don't know, whatever that fish is that forgets things and has to be reminded.
Goldfish?
Like, from...
Goldfish, yeah.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you. Yes,
oh gosh,
yes. So I'm whatever that fish is that forgets things all the time. And so whenever I'm ordering pasta, I look to my wife and I was like, what is that again? Like, I remember spaghetti because it's wired into my childhood. Everything else, is it a bucatini? Is it a linguine? I think I know what linguine is. Linguine spaghetti, everybody else, I have to like Google it or Google image search it or something every time. And then I heard there was a scandal, this bucatini shortage during COVID.
What? What is bucatini?
Dan, this is where you take
it's a spaghetti that's hollow down the center. So it's like a very narrow drinking straw shape.
Oh, got you. Okay.
And there was like a run on bucatini and some import challenges due to COVID restrictions. And this woman writer, I cannot remember her name right now.
I think
now,
it was Rachel Handler in New York Magazine. Let me double check.
There you go. She wrote the most amazing confessional, like first person essay about the search for bucatini. And it kind of elevated my lust for pasta. And since hearing that story, I was like, oh, pasta can do all this to a person? That's pretty exciting. I still can't remember what pastas are what kind. But I have a greater respect for it. And now with Dan's rating scale, I think I'm going to have a much more robust, fulfilling relationship with pasta. So I'm looking forward to it.
So, Dan, you went through these personal frustrations. You had a personal reckoning. You know what I mean? That moment where you dig deep into your soul and say, what am I going to do about it? Right?
Right. what can I, Dan... do about
it. Right. How can I contribute? Caveat, like, I recognize that in the grand scheme of especially the past year that like my pasta struggles are meaningless.
But they're
they're
fantastic. First of all, you're talking to
a comedian,
the most non-essential of all human beings. So I think I counter your meaningless with extra meaningless. So what happened to you?
Yeah, so I decided I wanted to do this because I've been hosting the Sporkful Food Podcast for 11 years, and I realize like I'm not a chef. I just love to eat. I kind of stumbled into it, and now it's become my career. And I realized, do I actually know anything? Like, I've never actually made anything. You know, I messed around in my kitchen, but I've never actually made anything. And try to see if I know what I'm talking about. And so this pasta project sort of became like the test of every food opinion I've ever had. And so I set out to try to create a new shape. I ate a bunch of like dozens of different shapes and I cataloged their attributes and narrowed the field of like, what are the attributes that I most like in a pasta? I mean, like tubes or flat or round or ruffles or ridges and all these different things. And then I, after a lot of research and some brick walls, I basically came out with the idea that what I want to do is to combine two shapes with some flair. The first shape was Mafalda, which is...
Oh, here we go. Now you're just making things
up. No, Mafalda. Mafalda is really good.
Pasting together.
Mafalda, it's like lasagna, but narrow enough to twirl on a fork, which is a long, flat noodle with ruffles on the edges. And Then the other was Bucatini, which I didn't like Bucatini at first. I thought it was overrated because everyone says, oh, it's so great because it's like spaghetti, but you get sauce in the hole. But I don't think the hole is big enough to gather any sauce. I think that's a myth. But what I learned that makes Bucatini great is that it's extremely tooth sinkable because most tube pastas are fat tubes. And so when you bite into them, they fall flat. But Bucatini, being a narrow tube, is springy.
Yeah.
And it's a very special textural phenomenon that doesn't exist in most pastas. So I set out to try to get the best of Mafalda and the best of Bucatini with another flourish or two and to make that my new shape.
Holy, what? Okay, so I just got
it. But the shape, but, I'm, you know, looking at the shape here, it does, that's the first thing I thought was like, oh, they're like mini lasagnas, but curved. You know, and it does, because one thing, again, I don't mean to fucking rail on spaghetti, but fuck spaghetti, okay? Because you can't, I feel like I'm slurping it in as opposed to ever biting it. Do you know what I mean? And so this felt like, and when I the first thought I had when I saw it was like, I'm gonna put my fucking teeth on that shit. Right? And that
can I borrow that quote? Nagin Farsad raves.
I'm gonna put my fucking teeth on that shit.
Okay.
I'm still stuck at the idea. So I had to image search Mafalda and Bucatini, and I saw them both, and they seem like different species. Can you even crossbreed those? Like, you sound like a mad scientist.
That's
right
a
now.
Phenomenal question. And the answer, as I go forth in my journey, is a bit of a spoiler if people listen to our series on the Sporkful. But I hit a major roadblock, which is that it turns out you cannot crossbreed them in the way that I wanted. Basically, the way you make pasta is that I had to get a dye made, a dye, D-I-E, like, you know, the Play-Doh factory?
Right.
You get the little star-shaped disc and you push the Play-Doh through the star-shaped disc and it comes out like a star.
Yeah.
That little plastic star-shaped disc is a dye. Ugh, my goddamn phone is ringing. Sorry, hold on one second.
It's okay.
Is that like a real phone? Is that
it's
a landline?
It's an old-timey phone that my mom got as a present for my kids. So down here in the basement, it's like their play phone. Yes, and it's got like a cord and everything.
We got to keep this in, Nagin. This is great. I haven't heard that sound in 30 years.
Oh,
sound effect.
My God. It's next to a phonograph.
So basically, you know, the Play-Doh factory dough goes out, the star shape, that little disc that's shaped like a star, that's a die. And pasta is made the same way. The dough goes through this hole that's made to do a certain shape. The problem is that when the dough goes through the die, you can't make ruffles and a tube at the same time because the movement required to make the ruffles crushes the tube.
Oh my God. Wow. You should make like a podcast about this. This is riveting.
Well, folks, we're running out of time. I want people to listen to the Sporkful 5-part series on this pasta. And then, Dan, is this pasta like going to be available?
It goes on sale tomorrow, March 19th at Sfolini.com. Sfolini is the pasta company I partnered with to make the pasta. It's S-F-O-G-L-I-N-I, Sfolini.com. And I'll share it on Sporkful social media website, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I have a box. I'm so excited. Like, again, I want to put my teeth into these in a really aggressive manner.
Yeah, and the series on the...
That sounds like something that would force you to resign as governor. You know, you're talking.
and the series on the Sporkful podcast is called Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible. That's awesome.
Oh, you're just killing it. Over
really
there.
Good. Really good. So
thank
dumb
you.
And great. Okay, folks, that is the end of the show. And what I would love is for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you in all the wonderful things that you do. Baratunde, how do they find you?
They find me under the name Baratunde on all the socials. We're talking Instagram, Twitter, TikTok primarily. And follow my podcast, How to Citizen with Baratunde at howtocitizen.com.
And Dan Pashman, how do they find you?
Check out the Sporkful podcast. Our new series, Mission Impossible, about my quest to invent a new pasta shape is up now. And social media at the Sporkful.
And folks,
lots of pictures and stuff on the Instagrams of the pasta shape.
Oh, it's so exciting. I truly cannot wait to allow myself to eat some carbs in the shape of the thing you designed. You know where to find me on all of the social media thingies. Don't forget our Patreon is patreon.com/NagineFarsad. And a little announcement, I'll remind you closer to the date, but I am in the Adult Swim animated series Bird Girl, and it is premiering on April 4th, and I'm so excited. And it's just like the cast is ridiculous, and I am just like the most garbage member of this cast that is amazing. And it's so funny. The show's so funny. It's just one of the projects I've been so the most proud of to be involved with over this last year or so. Please check out Bird Girl on April 4th. But what I would really love to do is thank our new team here at HeadGum. That's our producer, Julia Linden, our audio engineer, Stephanie Aguilar. Folks, that is the end of the show, and we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.